Police are investigating after brutal clashes between white power groups and counter-protesters erupted at a rally in Sacramento.
In West Virginia, at least two dozen are dead.
The National Weather Service calling this a 1,000-year flood. As President Obama declares a state of emergency, they're sending federal disaster aid.
For all our brothers and sisters who lost their lives in Orlando.
It is a reminder that while we have made progress on marriage equality, we've made progress on repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, there is hate in the world.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09, and today is Monday, June 27th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, and welcome to another business day. We begin with Brexit, and around the world, there is still a tumultuous trading going on all of the world stock markets in Asia and Europe. Asia seemed to fare better today than Europe, but in Europe, many of the indices are lower, 1 to 3.5% lower. And there is some indication of just how big this impact was, the Brexit impact was on U.S. investors. There is an estimate that U.S. investors lost about 3.5% on Friday after the vote to exit the European Union by people in Great Britain. U.S. exporters like Boeing, travel stocks like American Airlines, and tech companies like Apple all are suffering in the fallout from a strong dollar fueled by Britain's decision to leave the European Union. This morning in Great Britain, one of the leaders of the parties there, of the government there, is trying to urge people to take the economic outlook for the country with a grain of salt. He says it is going to be tough. Britain's finance chief, George Osborne, saying the UK's financial and economic stability before the stock market, stock exchange opened today, were stable. He says that the banks there have gone through tests to understand just how much they can handle, and they are really handling a lot today. Many of the banking stocks were actually halted in trading today because they lost so much. The British pound has dropped to its record low, one of its record lows over the last 30 years. We'll continue to watch your money and the situation in Europe and in Great Britain as the Brexit discussion and the aftermath hit full swing this morning. Dow futures are lower. That's to be expected, not nearly as lower as they were on Friday. It is Monday, and that means it is the Allstate CEO Spotlight here on 720 WGN and The Opening Bell. In the spotlight today is Ramses Alkay, and he is the brain behind a brain-computer interface that is using real technology, neuroscience, and electrical impulses to send from the brain to 3D equipment, technology, movements. It is a technology that is sure to be far beyond its real-world technology, technological use. It is already getting a lot of attention. His company, Neurable, is in the spotlight this morning. Ramses, welcome to the program this morning. I guess I want to start with, you know, what motivated you to do this? And give us a sense of what it is, our listeners, that this technology does.
Yeah, so right now there's a lot of amazing neurotechnology coming out, companies such as Emotive and Muse, and a lot of these companies allow you to control devices using your brain activity. But right now, one of the big limitations is that you can only do very simple applications, things like, for example, moving an object forward and back. With our technology at Neurable, what you can actually do is move objects or interact with software in ways that allow you to do full movement, in a way that would feel incredibly natural to you. And so that really kind of is it's a huge breakthrough forward in how human-computer interaction can happen.
So is it that somehow your brain is interacting with this device and all you have to do is think this and it happens?
it's not thought control.
Okay.
Right? It's there is some science behind it. You know, it's not telekinesis. The way that it works basically is that there's several commands that you can do, and really the person can customize what those commands are. And what we're able to do is determine which one of those commands you want to select or you want to use. And then from there, in the case of a wheelchair, for example, they can be just like a joystick on a wheelchair. You can have forward, back, left, right. We would have a similar command interface, but instead of using your hand, you would use your brain activity.
This is geared to specific disability, isn't it?
Initially, we were focused primarily in the medical end, and one of our big visions is actually trying to bring neurotechnology to the mainstream. And so we did a lot of customer discovery. We interviewed about 300 leaders in the consumer area space, and we found that there's a huge need in virtual reality where character navigation is a big issue. And so we're targeting this gaming area to make our technology ubiquitous. And then from there, we can target other markets like medical and industrial controls.
So for someone with cerebral palsy, how would this help them? How would this in their daily life help them?
Yeah, so for the cerebral palsy part, that was actually what we were doing previously. And basically, I work in a laboratory where we work with a lot of children who have cerebral palsy. And they need to take these tests that enable a clinician to determine what the cognitive abilities of the child. You take these tests in order to get basically basic treatment like physical therapy or wheelchairs. But if you don't have the movement or speech to take them, then you don't get physical therapy and you need physical therapy to take the tests. And so our technology breaks that barrier, allows these kids to take these tests, and then a physical therapist can work with them, and then they won't need to take the test with our system in the future.
In the Allstate CEO Spotlight today, it's Ramses Alkaid, the CEO of Neurable, talking about a breakthrough technology, brain-computer interface.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, I'm Brad Milkey at the New York Stock Exchange, which is again expected to drop at the opening bell, but not as badly as Friday. Futures are down about double digits as traders continue to examine the repercussions of Britain leaving the European Union. In early trading overseas, the value of the pound continues to plummet, adding to Friday's record one-day decline. Sterling is currently trading around $1.30, which will make for cheap trips to the UK. British Treasury Secretary George Osborne held a press conference ahead of European markets opening, saying the UK will confront its new predicament from a, quote, position of strength, but that didn't stop shares from sinking almost 4% as trading began. Asian stocks, meanwhile, are mixed. Crude oil continues to fall as well. As for Friday's sell-off, it wiped out more than $2 trillion from global markets, more than $800 billion in the U.S. alone. The typical 401k lost about $3,300 and will be bracing for more volatility on Monday. Brad Milkey, ABC News, the New York Stock Exchange.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Imagine a world where you can walk into your house and control everything with your mind. Or, let's say you're a game player and you want to play your games and simply use magic just by willing it. Now, this is the future that Neurable wants to create.
That's Ramses Alkaid, the CEO of Neurable, in the Allstate CEO Spotlight today at Neurable, N-E-U-R-A-B-L-E. Based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, it's a computer brain-computer interface that is connecting brain thoughts with 3D technology. And, Ramses, welcome back to the program, by the way. One of the things that I joke with people about in tech is, did a UFO or aliens bring you this idea in the middle of the night? Where did you get this idea? Is it something that you just woke up with one day, or how did it come into your mind?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great thing to really bring up. And it wasn't brought to me by aliens. It actually happened during their first couple months of my PhD program. And what it really came down to was I have kind of a different style of thinking about a lot of the brainwaves that are available. A lot of that comes from my background in electrical engineering, some of the work I've done there. But I really thought about the brainwave that we use specifically in a different light. And from there, it allowed us to create this artificial intelligence that really enabled a breakthrough in the scientific area that I specialized in.
How hands-on were you in creating this, or did you have a team of people that had different specialties helping you?
I created the main technology, and then, we had some undergraduates and some other graduate students as well, too, who worked on separate areas that we brought together.
The news of this in recent days is the funding. You know you're on to something when you get funding. Tell me about how successful this has been in recent weeks.
Yeah, we actually started fundraising about a month and a half ago, and it's just been overwhelming, the amount of interest that we've been getting from investors. And it's one of these things where they come in and they think, no, this isn't possible. These guys are pulling my leg. And then we bring them in, we have them see the technology, and then they're like, no, that's still impossible. You guys must be using voice commands or some sort of weird controller in your pocket. And so then we put the system on them and they're like, holy crap, this actually works and this is real. And there's this, first of all, every time I see it, even though I've been seeing it for the past 6 years, because that's how long I've been working on it, I have the biggest smile on my face. But then when you see the smile on other people's face when they use it and they realize that it's not science fiction anymore, that it's science, that's amazing.
There are some really prestigious awards and competitions across the country every year, and you won the Rice Business Plan, which is a huge deal. That you don't undersell yourself. That's huge. and you've grabbed the attention nationally too of Discovery Television. So this is getting out there. How are you dealing with all of this in terms of the popularity, the publicity?
I mean, it's kind of a balancing act. So like other companies, we're trying to be a little bit more stealth mode about kind of what we're doing. But it's also one of these things where there's a huge public perception that's negative toward brain-computer interfaces, because a lot of companies have produced products that underwhelm people in their capability. And so we also want to get the word out. We want to let people know that there is this new type of technology that can really revolutionize how we do things.
Artificial intelligence is, it seems, the buzzword these days. Yours is a good example of it, but where do you think this is taking us?
Well, artificial intelligence is probably one of the hottest areas that anybody should really look into. Right now, we're in an area where AI is actually exponentially growing in complexity and capability every year. And so, you know, when it comes to a lot of these problems that, you know, we're solving within my particular space and in other spaces, there's going to be a huge increase in the capability of what problems can be solved, especially ones that were initially too complex for the brain. And that's really why we use AIs in our space. Humans can't analyze these signals fast enough, and they can't analyze them accurately enough. So we use artificial intelligences that can.
And also the ability part of this, too, for those with disabilities. It's sort of going to even the playing field in a certain way. I mean, if you look far enough into the future, you can see that happening, can't you?
I mean, the mission of Neurable is actually to create a world without limitations. And that's what we strive to do every single day. So I completely agree with you. That's what we want.
Has that been in your upbringing? Is there something in your upbringing that you maybe didn't have a level playing field at some point? Is there something back there that motivated you to push forward in this area?
I would say it really happened when I was about 8 years old. So my uncle got into a truck accident and lost both his legs. And since then, I have pretty much dedicated my life toward creating a world without limitations. And I studied electrical engineering to learn about robotics and control systems, prosthetics. Realized that the main issue is not the hardware development, but actually the connection between the mind and the machine. And so that's why I decided to do a PhD in neuroscience at the University of Michigan.
Do you also have to have a balance, a work-life balance? Do you get away from all of this at some point? And what do you do to get away from it?
Yeah. I always at least take one day where it's just for myself. And, you know, it's kind of weird because people think that I'm an extrovert most of the time. Mm-hmm. But I really actually truly am an introvert. You know, I go out there and I pitch and I socialize and I network, but then I come home exhausted. And I just need at least one day or some time to either just watch Netflix or play some video games or, play with some of the latest gadgets and technologies that are out there. I'm kind of a nerd like that.
What's on your Netflix playlist?
Well, right now, I'm actually watching HBO Go stuff, which is I'm trying to get caught up on Game of Thrones. So,
do you watch Silicon Valley at all?
I do, yeah.
What would be on your music playlist? What do you listen to with music?
I actually just go on YouTube and I type epic music and I hit whatever 40-hour track there is available. So,
tell me a little bit about your, is there a mentor? Is there somebody who's given you inspiration? Obviously, you talked about your uncle, but is there somebody else who's inspired you?
People that have inspired me most of them I haven't met, even though I would like to meet them. I mean, one of the big ones is actually like Peter Thiel. You know, he has this idea that he has a book called Zero to One. It's all about, you know, creating transformative technology. And one of the things that I don't think a lot of startups do is they try to solve hard problems. And part of the reason for that is because failure is so easy to find that way. But in my belief, failure is learning to succeed. And so I think it's imperative that startups start trying to focus on hard problems to solve.
And that's one of the big issues, is that when people fail, they sometimes get depressed and they go and hide. How do you get through that?
Well, I mean, I never see it like as failure. Like I said, it's learning to succeed. You know, it's one step more that you know how to handle a situation in the future. And really, I mean, you have a whole life ahead of you. No matter where you're at, you know, you still have a lot of potential for what you can do.
Ramsey Zalkay is CEO of Neurable, based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where he's an electrical engineer and neuroscience PhD at the University of Michigan. You can find him on Twitter at Neurable and at Neurable.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. Let's bring you up to date first with what's going on in the UK. The pound has dropped to a low not seen since 1985. On Friday, it crashed to a three-decade low. It fell another 2.5% today. German Chancellor Angela Merkel says there cannot be formal talks on the condition for Britain leaving the European Union before London has filed formal notice of its intention to quit the bloc. Also this morning, George Osborne, one of the leaders of the financial sector in the UK, has offered this message to people in the UK.
During the negotiations that will follow, there will be no change to people's rights to travel and work, and to the way our goods and services are traded, or to the way our economy and financial system is regulated. The Bank of England stands ready to provide £250 billion of funds through its normal facilities to continue to support banks and the smooth functioning of markets.
After the Brexit is completed, that will be another story, though. The airline sector will be almost immediately heading for cover and will need major changes and rule changes. Right now, any airline that is based in the European Union can fly anywhere within the single market whenever it wants. And that will likely change for the likes of London's EasyJet, Dublin's Ryanair, and others. That will all have to be worked out as the future moves closer into this Brexit and this divorce. Well, here in this country, government reports says frequent flyer programs are in need of improvement. As a matter of fact, the Department of Transportation Inspector General says the current state of these programs make them hard for consumers to decipher, and they're so confusing the government can't even tell themselves what is going on and whether consumers are being ripped off. Rick Sini of Fair Compare, the CEO of faircompare.com, is with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Rick, what's going on here? Is this a full-on investigation of these frequent flyer programs?
Yeah, well, what's happened a couple days ago was the Office of the Inspector General sent a note out. They were auditing frequent flyer programs and how the Department of Transportation actually manages the complaints that are filed on frequent flyer programs. There was about 70-some-odd complaints that were out there. And essentially, the Inspector General slapped the hands of the Department of Transportation and said, you guys need to quit forwarding these things on the airline and actually take a look at them. And see, you know, if the airlines are actually being transparent or actually adhering to some rules. For example, changing the rules without plenty of leeway and time. For example, changing rules in the last couple weeks before things. So essentially, they also did an audit as well to see if you could actually redeem frequent flyer tickets. That was sort of the good news in the actual report, saying that over 90% of the time they were able to find award seats on the days they were looking for on Delta and American. American, which were the two airlines that were in the sample there. So it looks like essentially what they're telling the Department of Transportation is quit rubber stamping customer complaints about frequent flyer programs. They're extremely complex. They've been changed dramatically, and make the airlines be a little bit more transparent on how many seats they actually do give away for free.
Because two of the dirty words that we've always heard from consumers about this are blackout dates, and those always seem
exactly.
to change.
Exactly. Well, yeah. it's not even blackout dates. It's the what I like to call the quintfecta, which is how do I get to Hawaii, Orlando, Las Vegas, London, Paris, Rome? I guess that's six actually, but and they can never find seats to those particular destinations. It's always easy to find a ticket to Sioux City, Iowa. Sioux City, South Dakota. I'm sorry.
I think there's a Sioux City, Iowa, isn't there?
Yeah, maybe there's two of them.
Yeah,
actually.
I think it's where that plane crashed.
So, but anyway, so it's easy to find those kind of tickets. It's really hard to find the ones you actually want to take your family to.
And that's the part of it too, is that the fine print is so complicated. And we're, as Americans, we don't like to read fine print a lot of times. Is this sometimes our fault too, because we don't?
It is, and I will say a couple things about frequent flyer programs. It's always good to join the program. This report also noted that over 300 million people in the United States have joined that program. I'm wondering, because there's only slightly over 300 million people total in the U.S. But you actually get your boarding passes that way. You can also get to board and get seat assignments in the process a little bit easier. So it's actually good to sign up for the program. Now, whether or not you actually try to accumulate miles and redeem points. In general, if you're not flying at least three times a year and you're not spending at least $5,000 a month on your credit card, you will have a rough time actually redeeming tickets, especially to places like Europe, for example, where the redemption levels are fairly high, especially if you have a family of three or four that you're trying to redeem for. So it takes many years to do that. You're probably better off getting, for example, a cashback card in these cases instead of trying to accumulate virtual currency of airline mileage.
The other part of this, too, is, when an airline does go belly up or when maybe it merges with another, do these perks go away? Are you sort of left holding the bag if you, like, for instance,
What's happened in the last 6 or 7 years since we started off with mergers initially with Delta, Northwest, United, Continental, Southwest, AirTran, American, U.S. Airways, because these mergers occurred after sort of the recession and then right in the middle of the recession, the case of Delta and Northwest, they basically, when they combined the programs, they took the best of both because they didn't want to lose customers, especially the customers that really enjoy those perks and benefits. So they tend to, for example, recently American added a fourth level to their program, which was part of the U.S. Airways program and also matches the other programs. All of the airlines now have completely changed their way that they accumulate points from a how far you've flown method, quote unquote miles, to how much you've actually paid. So if you're paying a lot for your ticket, or more importantly, if your boss is paying a lot for your ticket, you're probably going to fly for free with your family. But other than that, it's pretty tough to actually redeem.
And this falls back into that area we always talk about with the airlines making so much money. It seems if they're cheating people on these programs, that seems like a kind of a raunchy thing to do.
Yeah, well, the whole math has changed with airlines. If you look back 6 or 7 years ago, on average, 30% of all planes were empty. That's plenty of seats to give away for free. Now it's around 10% of planes are empty. That's a much smaller number. And remember, airlines also, they also have airline employees that have free flight benefits and their families. So there's just not enough really empty seats as they had 6 or 7 years ago in order to give those, and especially to locations that people want to go to, most popular ones being Hawaii, London, Paris, Rome, for example.
Stock of United Airlines, Chicago-based United Airlines, is up this morning. The CEO, Munoz, is briefing investors on plans over the next year that include a drop of, he says, between 7% and 8% revenue. What would be behind that drop in revenue?
I think what you're seeing is that you saw a big jump in demand after the recession, and people have some pent-up demand for flying. And to some degree, the price of oil didn't affect the price of airline tickets. And finally, you know, after 18 months of the price of oil dropping from 100 down to 30 and now back up to 50 more recently, part of those oil prices, which really gave the airlines their windfall profits, are starting to slow down. Demand is probably slowing down a little bit for those things. And if the airlines are actually adding a bit of capacity as well, so they're adding in a few new aircraft. For example, you have some new routes to places like Cuba that'll be opening up over the next 12 months or so. So I think a lot of it is airline ticket prices are finally, after 18 months of oil prices going down, starting to drop as well.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com. You can find him on Twitter at Rick Cini, at FareCompare. You can find FareCompare at FareCompare.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
548 on the WGN Market Desk this morning. Dow futures off 104 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures also lower after a tumultuous night on the overseas markets. Let's get an update on what's happening on the commodities market. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Besides dealing with the Brexit vote on Friday, the commodity markets will have a couple of other things to react to today, particularly in the livestock community. The pig crop report issued Friday showing the number of hogs and pigs on farm up 2%, the number kept for breeding up 1%, the number kept for marketing up 2%. And Dennis Smith at Archer Financial Services says two items stand out as a bearish surprise. First, the March-May farrowings came in above expectations, up 1%. And second, the pigs per litter at 10.48, up 1%, is record large. And the March-May pig crop at 30.3 million is the largest spring pig crop in 45 years. And then there was the cattle on feed report issued Friday, showing the number of cattle placed on feed went up 10% in May, pretty much in line with what traders were expecting. But in the monthly cattle on feed report, 1,884,000 head of cattle placed in feedlots last month. And cattle in feedlots as of June 1st totaled 10.7 million head, up 1% from last year. And marketings of cattle shipped out of feedlots to processing plants were 1.7 million head, up 5% from a year ago. But again, overriding all of the activity today will be how world markets react to Brexit. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Just to update the situation across the pond in Great Britain this morning, here are some of the headlines that we will be following as we follow your money throughout the morning. In London today, there is a new interest in stocks there as the head of the financial sector, George Osborne, has tried to reassure people in Great Britain that the Bank of England is steady and that it can handle any tumult that is to come over the next weeks or months. Also today, the German Chancellor has said that formal talks can begin on conditions for Britain leaving the European Union until London has filed formal notice of its intention to quit the bloc. There have been several more people, leaders of the Conservative Labour Party, who have quit this morning. Several posts in addition are calling on leader Jeremy Corbyn to step down. About a half a dozen lawmakers who serve as spokespeople on key issues quit this morning. They follow 11 members of his shadow cabinet who quit over the weekend or late last week. We'll continue to follow this throughout the morning here on WGN and bring you the very latest on Brexit and what it's doing, how it's impacting world markets, including markets here in the United States. Again, Dow futures are off about 110 points. The S&P futures off about 13. NASDAQ off about 35. Asia ended the night in positive territory. The Nikkei up almost 2.5%. Not so much for European markets. The FTSE 100 in London is off about 90 points. The FTSE 200 is off about 288 points. Both of those about 2%. In Germany, the DAX is off about 2% as well.